It's like, why doesn't people want to do drugs and beat up children with me? I'm so lonely.
That, you know what? That's a really good point, is we never get Brocklehurst's side of the story.
He's so misunderstood. Year, Lillian. 2024. Wow. The time has flown. Old acquaintance be forgot. That was horribly off tune. Wait, let me try that again.
But it was
May
beautiful.
Old acquaintance be forgot. There we go. That one was better.
And please leave in both.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah, of course. Everyone needs to know that I'm secretly a bad singer. Sometimes.
No, I think people need to know that even in a new year, it's a fresh start and you can start again immediately if you need to.
Hell yeah.
Because all fresh starts can have a second fresh start if they need to.
You know, nothing like tripping at the starting line to get the year off right. There's nowhere to go but up.
At work, I like become this monster of corporate cliches. And one of the ones that I use all the time is let's not trip on the finish line. Mm. But I love the idea of tripping on the starting
line.
Yeah,
right? Like you just, like, tie your shoelaces and just instantly face plant right when the little whistle goes.
As it turns out, we did not prepare for this year. We are going to try again.
Here we go. But hey, this episode is coming out to you guys on, I believe, New Year's Day.
Yes, it is.
So we are recording it in that spooky in-between time between Christmas and New Year's. I am on vacation.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, I'm on vacation wacky Piper mode, so let's do this thing.
Piper texted me and was like, hey, I know we'd said Friday, but like now I kind of have plans. Do you want to do Thursday or Saturday? And I honestly had to be like, both of those, I am free and do not have plans, but I can't tell you the distance between now and either of those days.
Right?
Because I don't know when now is.
It's that weird vacation void. It's like, I don't know what day it is. I don't know, but that's okay, I guess. Don't worry about it.
And you guys are back in real time, New Year's Day. You're getting ready to go back to work tomorrow, I assume.
Oof.
Future Piper and Lillian are for sure.
Yeah, bummer. Bummersville. But anyway, we're here to talk about the reclaimed lost footage of our secret last version that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So we're talking about a few things today. We're starting with what I thought was going to be one of the adaptions on my list of adaptions we haven't watched. I genuinely didn't think that this existed anywhere. I'm shocked that it was uploaded to YouTube and we were able to watch the four episodes we did, which I think we finally answered the questions. What if Jane Eyre, but only the bad parts?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, kind of. It's got a few of the key moments at the end, but a lot of the what was saved was the stuff no one cares about.
And listeners, I'd like for you to think about, like, you know this show at this point. If we were going to watch an adaptation of Jane Eyre that only had the stuff we didn't like, it would, of course, be episode one, childhood. then jump into future stuff, immediately the worst parts of it.
Yeah.
A few good things. I'm not going to ruin Piper's recap because she's got a recap coming in hot for you guys. Mm-hmm. So you can know what these four episodes we watched were. But we watched episodes 1, 4, and 5.
And 6.
And 6. I just didn't take any notes of episode 6.
Nice.
of the 1963, I believe, BBC miniseries of Jane Eyre.
Yeah. Because this is the one that in the documentary they said, like, it burned in a fire or it got written over. No, we talked about this last time. They were broke. And so they were just recording over old stuff. So it got lost that way. But somehow these parts survived the cutting blur.
Yes. They're in the documentary. They were actually talking about a different adaption of a different Bronte. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of BBC archive stuff that got destroyed during that time because they didn't have money, which from what I've seen of this, maybe it's not that terrible of a loss.
I wonder if, I imagine that BBC is similar to PBS, the public broadcasting service mm-hmm. here in the States. And PBS will do, like, I feel like it was quarterly, at least, like fundraisers. They would do these like telephone drives where they'd interrupt my child's programming to have all these old people on the phones be like, go wake up your parents. And if they donate $20, you get this stuffed animal of Arthur. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, that's cool, but I want my other shows. Bring back my shows. And that's how they stayed on the air. So,
well, and what they probably should have done for the BBC, and maybe they should consider doing it for stuff now, is like, if you don't donate, instead of it being like a reward for donating, it's like, if you don't donate, we're going to burn this film.
Oh my God. It's a hostage situation. They're like, we want $2 million in cash or else say goodbye to the 2006 Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
They'd raise $1 million in an hour. People would revolt.
We've got enough British listeners or people who are familiar with the UK and the BBC. Let us know if they do fundraisers. Or if that's just an American thing where they ask us for money for public television.
You know, telethon. It's capitalism. It's what our country's based on.
It's kind of like our thing.
Yeah.
You guys do it too, but you have like a social safety net. We don't do that.
Okay, can I recap these wacky four episodes?
Do. Hold on. So it's four episodes. I'm going to start a timer for you. It's weird that you like don't want to go down my weird political rabbit hole, Piper.
You know, I'm here to pivot. That's what I do.
Okay. I am ready when you are.
Okay. So, Jane Eyre is the story of a young girl locked in a red room. She sees some spooky stuff where her uncle died. And then this guy is called because she's thought to be bad. And he pulls her by the hair. And boy, do things get bad when she gets to that school. Because this dude is so abusive, he literally kills Helen Burns. And then she's an adult and he's like, oh, you get to stay here. And she's like, fuck you, I'd rather die. Goodbye. I also have a new job. Guess what? Now she's engaged. And she... the lady that she works with is shocked by this for some reason, but that's because at the wedding that we see in the next 5 seconds, someone interrupts and says, oh, actually he's married, blah, blah, blah. She runs off, meets this guy. His name is St. John. He sucks. She inherits money. The house burns down. She goes back and he has a horrible scar. The end.
I liked that it turned into a musical recap there at the end.
Yeah. Ha-cha-cha.
last recap, best recap, 43 seconds.
Yo.
And a song.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can get better than that.
Thank you. I just think it's hilarious to go straight from leaving Thornfield to suddenly she's like, I'm engaged. Mr. Rochester proposed. That's just where we were.
Obviously, nobody who, like, had never seen Jane Eyre before would watch this, because that would be insane. But I am very glad we know the story as well as we do, that I was like, okay, kind of weird vibe, though. Weird energy to get introduced to Rochester at a wedding, huh?
Yeah, super weird. But, okay, so for this, like, first episode, we just really need to talk about how much this version was like, we're going to make sure that everyone knows that Brocklehurst is a monster. And they really laid into that. And people held him accountable.
About the fact, oh, for sure. We've talked about the fact before that, like, when they have short childhoods, they're sometimes really intense. Mm-hmm. And this is 24 minutes of the childhood, because each episode was 24 minutes, which relative to a movie would be long, but for a miniseries was pretty short.
Yeah.
And wow, they went hard. They went hard immediately. Mm-hmm. They start with Jane in the Red Room screaming. Mm-hmm. And then the Red Room is very spook scare.
Although it does have a stuffed animal in it. And I was like, why? Why is there a stuffed animal in this room?
This is the point we're at in watching Jane Eyre. Because we're just like, yeah, there's a little girl screaming and knocking on the door. Sure, the painting's eyes glow. Yeah. Oh, there's a ghost in the bed. Why is there a stuffed animal in here, guys? Let's talk about the real concerns.
Right? Because I was like, wait, at first, like, that implies that maybe a kid was in there, but it was hit, like, where he went to die. So I don't know. Maybe he needed a comfort stuffy on his deathbed and they brought him a stuffed animal.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Honestly, more grown men need to have comfort stuffies for when they're dying.
It's true. It's true.
And that's a stance that we have had since day one of this podcast.
Yeah.
This is what we've been building towards. And I'm really glad.
A new campaign. Get every dying elder person a stuffy. Which is actually a sweet thing. They need that anyway.
Yeah. I will say the actor who played Brocklehurst really made me hate Brocklehurst. I love that when Jane is coming in the room, Brocklehurst is doing what I'm assuming is supposed to be snuff, which is a type of tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
But in my head, he's doing hard drugs.
Yeah, just like
and that snorted. Was some cocaine quick before the little girl came in.
Well, my other theory is that if he had a tragic backstory, his parents were killed by curly hair, because he, like, literally in that time of meeting Jane, he grabs her by the hair, and then the rest of his stuff is him harassing girls and their hair, and it's just like, dude.
You can't just casually.
I can, because I can get these reactions out of you, Lillian. That's what I'm here for. I pivot, and I give you jokes.
Oh, God. Broccoli's rough, rough childhood where his parents were killed by curly hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh, they were barbers.
That's terrible.
They cut off a bunch of hair and they inhaled it and suffocated, and he swore his revenge. He's like, no curly hair ever again. It killed my parents.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, the young actress who played Jane, not good at acting.
Oh, interesting. I thought she was
fine.
She was
not good at acting.
She's fine.
She said all the words.
Yeah. She was very over the top, but I felt this whole thing was rather melodramatic. So I don't know. I felt like she was in line with the other people. She didn't stand out horribly from the rest that I was like, oof. But
yeah, I pretty early on started going oof with young Jane. I think she did a pretty good job having the tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
But when she was supposed to give like speeches, she wasn't very good at them. Yeah. Like her moment of like, stay. I don't remember the lines anymore. Stay healthy and not die.
Yeah.
that was not delivered with any level of interest for me. Mm. Her speech to, the aunt was like, just not good. It was just louder.
Mm.
Like it wasn't, there was no more conviction in it. It was just louder than her other things she'd said.
Yeah. She was a very tall little Jane.
Yes.
She had a pretty little face. Maybe it was just like nepotism. Maybe they just cast her because she was somebody's pretty daughter.
Ugh, I'm just going to assume it's nepotism now and I'm mad about it.
There we go.
I will say another really great moment was Brocklehurst's daughters had great hats.
Mm, yes. There's a lot of
some
fancy
of the best
hats.
Fancy hats.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I know I already kind of touched on this, but when Brocklehurst is like seeking revenge on the curly hair of the world and he's like, you know, fuming about one girl, goes around the room, points out a whole bunch of others, goes after Helen, and he like body checks her. No, right?
Yeah.
Because he's like yelling at Jane and Helen stands up to be like, no, it's my fault. Don't punish her. And he like shoves her and then she has a coughing attack and dies.
Yes.
That's not an exaggeration.
And right before that, he canes Jane.
Yes.
So instead of it just being like, stand on this chair and you don't get to eat all day, which like admittedly feels like a more unique and cruel punishment. Like they did cane children back then, which is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't usually see Brocklehurst caning a little girl.
Well,
and then body checking one to the ground. So until she dies.
Until she dies. No, that was the thing is when he like called it for the stool and he's like, I am now going to give you the most severe punishment imaginable. I was literally thinking in my brain, because I know traditionally it's for her to stand up there and be ashamed and have her meals like reduced. And I'm like, well, that does suck, but at least he's not conducting physical harm on her. And then he did that. And I'm like, never mind. I was wrong. Yep.
He pulls her hair like immediately.
Yes.
He does drugs and then pulls her hair.
Yeah.
This guy's when he meets her.
Psychotic. So
he's just the worst.
It does like a little fade to black. And then we see him suddenly all remorseful and worried about the child that he beat up. And the doctor's like giving him what for, being like, yeah, she's going to die. And he's like, what? Die? And it's like, yeah. And it's not just because you fucking punched a child. It's because you've been like neglecting this illness for a long time. Yeah. Her death is on your hands, Brocklehurst. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll give her all the things that she needs to be happy until she passes. And it's like, wow, guy. Okay, sure.
Too little, too late,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah. So,
But yeah, I do like watching Broccoli get his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. And when you make Broccoli this bad, you have to also have him get his comeuppance. Because I'm pretty sure it's in the book that he gets reprimanded by the Board of Governors.
Yes, it is. He gets, they take away his responsibility of the school.
Which is weird that they don't include that in most of the adaptations.
Right.
Like, it's weird to me that she had the point of, like, other people should hold leaders who are being neglectful accountable is like a point she's making. Mm-hmm. And movies are like, feels like a lot of nuance that we don't have time for.
The point is to know that he sucks and we've established that, so we can move on.
Let's all just move on. I did also enjoy a very like antithetical to canon moment at the end of the episode when Jane has all grown up. And she's talking to Miss Temple about her new job that she's gotten. And she goes, I'm to be treated as one of the family. And I'm like, that's not what she wanted at all. In fact, she explicitly said it made her pretty uncomfortable when she thought Mrs. Fairfax was the main person in the house treating her like an equal.
I don't know. They're trying to give her a sense of like, oh, I've only experienced like hardship and mm-hmm. no family before, so I think for the audience's sake, they're like, oh, that's probably what Jane wants, so we'll just say that's what she's after.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also liked how Brocklehurst is, like, talking to Miss Temple, and even she stands up to him, which is great, of him being like, oh, like, what are these black marks on Jane Eyre's record? And she's like, I didn't put those marks there. And he's like, but somebody did. And she's like, I will only talk about what grades I have given, and I think Jane is great. Mm-hmm. And just, he's like, it's like, why doesn't people want to do drugs and beat up children with me? I'm so lonely.
That, you know what? That's a really good point, is we never get Brocklehurst's side of the story.
He's so misunderstood.
He closes Miss Temple. He goes in the other room after Miss Temple frankly bullies him.
Yes.
And then he cries mm-hmm. and has flashbacks of his parents choking on curly hair.
And he's like, where's my stuffy? Why aren't there stuffies for sad grown men?
And that's why the other thing we don't see is after he gets reprimanded by the Board of Governors and kicked out of there, he opens a very successful stuffy for grown men business. Cute. And that's why all grown men now have stuffies.
This is the secret. We are gonna, I don't even know what to say about this.
We're gonna start a business and we're gonna call it Brocklehurst Grown Men Stuffies. And the tagline is gonna be Why Therapy Wins Stuffies.
There you go. Stuffies from Broccoli.
And they're all just little broccoli, like, vegetables with little smiley faces on them, and you could pay extra to get a little box of cocaine.
Oh my god. Incredible. Yes. So after all of this amazing stuff happens, Jane has received a proposal. Mm-hmm. And she's very excited about it. And doesn't know why Miss Fairfax isn't excited for her. So weird.
And then this adaptation makes a really unique choice mm-hmm. to jump ahead in time. Mm-hmm. She gets engaged to Mr. Rochester immediately because he treated her like family. I've got to assume.
Yeah.
We've got to assume that's what happened in the episodes we didn't see.
Because here at Thornfield, just like at Olive Garden, your family.
There's this TikTok video that I'm obsessed with. It's one of those that like hits me right in the funny bone, and I laughed for like days about
oh my
this.
God,
like, couldn't stop laughing, hurt my stomach, laughed. And it's this girl trying to remember like different like taglines for restaurants.
Nice.
And she has one with Olive Garden, and the one she gets stuck on because she knows she's really close is, this is your family now.
Amazing. You have no choice.
I just imagine you like going into Olive Garden and them just sitting you at a table and being like, this is your family. family now.
Oh my God. No ifs, ands, or buts. Say goodbye to the old ones. They're dead.
So she shows up. Olive Garden says, this is your family now.
Yes. Offers her a ring. She says, you must like me because you just put a ring on it. Great. Love this.
And then she's really surprised at this immediate proposal by a strange man she's never met before.
Yeah.
Is not legitimate because...
Oh, wait. There's a fashion montage.
We forgot about the shopping trip. I forgot about the shopping
yes,
trip.
Yes. There's as closest a fashion montage as we can get. Where they come back and there's also lots of this is where we see like the only like genuine like chemistry and banter between these two characters mm-hmm. and the footage that was salvaged. And mm-hmm. at first he's kind of very grumpy because he's like, well, I bought you this stuff because I wanted to. And she's like, is this what you're going to be like as my husband? And he's like, no, I like you. I'm just kidding. And she's like, hee hee, cute, sweet, awesome. And they just do some flirts and stuff and they look at fashion and he's got the mutton chops. We talked about that last time.
Yeah.
So he's got the chops. I think he's very old timey hoity toity in his like delivery of things. Very like, Jared, this is how things are, blah blah blah.
Yes.
But
very fancy boy, yeah. Very what I think of as stereotypically British man. Mm-hmm. I assume you guys are still like that. Let us know if you're different now.
but then we get our wedding interruption.
Mm-hmm. And frankly, listeners, I watched this a week ago because we were going to record last week and then I had a migraine. So I don't remember exactly how many people interrupted, but it was a classic adaptation snafu. Mm-hmm. Where the result was a bunch of men
yep.
needing an explanation from Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I will give this Rochester some credit. There's a couple moments that I want to talk about in the like introduction of Bertha and stuff. But he does do a lot of explaining to men he does not care about. Like real Rochester, actual Rochester. He would not care about what these men think. He is only explaining for Jane's benefit.
Yes.
And this man keeps forgetting that Jane is in the room and instead explains to these men. And then when Jane disappears, he goes, no, I fucked up.
Okay. So two things that stand out to me from like the reveal and everything. One is that she didn't have quite the level of a Jane reaction as we got in the Charlton Heston one, but there was a pretty obvious when they're like, oh, she's married and she's still alive. And Jane's little head does like a, what? Like she's like, excuse me? Like this is a pretty dramatic turn.
She has a big dramatic reaction there. And then she's a huge dramatic reaction when Rochester gets attacked.
Well, yes, because Jane jumps on the cartoon pile of like smoke and fists that are flying around, little stars coming out. She jumps into that little Looney Tunes scrap to like try and save him. And he's like, no, get Jane away from here. So she's scrappy. She's ready to fight for her man. So we got to give her points for that. Don't
big points for that. Fighting for her man. Her man caring enough that she left the room to notice and run after her. He gets big points for that. But in general, the vibe that I got from this was, you care way too much what these other men think.
Yes, very much so.
And that's just not Rochester.
Oh, another thing we skipped after fashion montage is Bertha coming in and wearing the veil and scaring Jane so much that Jane screams and like faints. And then Rochester enters the room immediately and we get to see him carry her bridal style to then like lay her down and then gaslight her. So,
yeah. Yeah, you gotta pay attention to the screen and then immediately gaslight her. Yes. It's so important.
Very important.
It is so funny because like you realize how just awful Rochester is if this is the only glimpse of him you see. Like if all you see is Rochester. We didn't get to see the proposal.
Right.
We see immediately after the proposal. Mm-hmm. And Rochester after the proposal in Jane Eyre, if that's all you see of him, he's a dick.
That's his most lie-y McLie face stage. Yes.
They just got a lot of gaslighting, one cute scene. And then I'm curious as to your thoughts on the stay speech, because they did do a pretty condensed stay speech.
Yeah.
I think they could have spent more time on it, but they also were trying to go fast, which I get.
Yeah.
Because they only had 3 hours to tell a whole story.
Right. I feel like if you were new to this story, it would be fairly sympathetic I do like that, you know, she asked a lot of questions. It wasn't as much of like him just like monologuing at her. It felt more of a conversation, yeah. which I appreciated. So I love that she literally says straight to his face, she's like, why did you marry this woman? And he has this moment where he sits down and he's like, my father forced me into this marriage when I was really young. He made me do it. And I didn't know what she was like until after the fact. And I was like, oh, I mean, that's a straightforward, like, you know, reasonable kind of thing. So I thought that was nice.
I liked Rochester in this. I think he was pretty sympathetic. I felt like I wanted him to be a little bit more upset. And he did get more upset kind of as he realized Jane wasn't going to stay.
Yeah.
Which fair. Mm-hmm. And it's also not fair to compare it to Timothy Dalton, but, Timothy Dalton, I think, walked the line really well of seeming like frantic and overwhelmed and exhausted, like but trying to be calm.
Yeah.
And then becoming like really manic and insane when he realized Jane was leaving, where this guy seemed like way too like sane.
Yeah.
There was no underlying energy there. Yeah. And I wish there was an underlying energy there. They also did something that I like in some of these earlier adaptions that we see where sometimes they pull a piece from the book that doesn't necessarily make it into most adaptations because they're not trying to adapt the adaptations that have already been done and instead are doing sort of their unique look at it. Mm-hmm. And so they kept the line in there of, I care for myself, which we do not see in a lot of adaptations. And I think they did it really well, the way that they put it in there. So I think Jane was probably one of my favorite Janes during this scene.
Yeah.
She did a really good job sort of standing up for that.
Absolutely. And yeah, he definitely got very distraught at the end. But I don't think obviously it compares to some of our greats, but they did their best.
They did do their best.
Yeah. And then Jane leaves. And this is where it felt very, her like stumbling through the wilderness, that felt very melodramatic for me. Like it was a lot of her just kind of like openly weeping as she like stumbles through bushes.
Literally what I wrote in my notes is, yes, we get it. You're dying in nature.
I know, right? So that was just kind of funny. It was also a little kind of like dark comedy. I felt for them, the editing of these scenes were constantly just cutting back and forth between Jane's having the worst day of her life to then cutting into these like happy little home scenes with the rivers. And they're all just like, oh, Christmas will soon be here. Isn't it wonderful that we're all together? And then it cuts to Jane being like, just like stumbling, getting her face smacked with wet leaves. Just like, okay.
That is one of my favorite things that does happen in quite a few adaptations, which is like they don't know how to make it like rough that Jane's outside. So they go, A, it has to be raining, which like fair, I guess. And B, let's instead of have, we can't have a full tree. Like it's a set. We aren't going to be able to get a full tree, but we can get some trees and we can hit that girl in the face with them.
We sure can.
some leaves, you get a leaves and some branches and we're going to throw them at her face and it's going to be great. It's going to really drive the message home.
And to really put some salt in the wound, she's going to have to barter with this old lady at the door for a good couple minutes of her just being like, no, don't even think about sneaking back here later and stealing from us. There's a man and a dog and they've got guns, both of them. The dog has a gun. So don't you come at this
The dog always has a gun.
Yeah.
That's what a guard dog is. In case anybody, like any listeners not from America, American dogs have guns. I don't have a gun because I don't love guns, but like my dog has a gun
because
she's allowed.
One. Yeah. Every dog comes with a gun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And like you can't give it back.
Yeah. Nope.
It's kind of a whole thing.
Well, they've imprinted on them. So, yeah. It's like a sibling. You can't separate them. It's too deep.
That's such a great I tried just taking the bullets away. Ruth would not have it.
No. And she's like, where did you put my NRA hat, Lillian? I need it.
So there's a lot of St. John's non-romance with the sweet lady from that he should marry.
Yeah.
If he was somebody who had any desire to live a happy life.
I feel like one thing that I do like about this is there's quite a few scenes where the ladies in this are just kind of like teasing the men in different scenes, which I do enjoy. And there's definitely a scene when Jade like leaves the portrait out and he's looking at it and she's like, do you recognize the portrait? And he's like, I don't know. I probably know who it is. She's like, you know who it is. Say who it is. He's like, okay, it's this girl that I like, but shut up. And it's just like, he's like,
shut up. Yeah. I want to talk about it.
He's like, no, Jade, I came here to belittle you and propose to you. I don't want to talk about this other girl. this other woman who's too fancy and pretty to have a horrible life with me, unlike you, you dirty, lonely toad.
I came here to gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss you into doing what I wanted to by manipulating you with your own beliefs.
Yeah.
And if you point out that I might like a girl, that totally undermines my authority over you.
So stop it. I'm trying to be a guy.
Something that we didn't talk about because we got too excited about talking about Sinjin, classic us, is Rochester does go look for Jane,
yeah.
Which I enjoyed. I always love a Rochester trying to save Jane.
It's so
That's
nice.
A sweet moment.
He like comes back. And his
assumption she's dead.
Yes, yes. he comes back to Thornfield. He's all exhausted because he's been like riding all over the county looking for her. Miss Fairfax is like, oh, you should eat food. And he's like, leave me alone, woman. I'm exhausted. And she's like, oh, sorry. I'll just go back to being a simple, quiet lady in your house.
The only way you like me.
Don't mind me. I know my place. Zip it. But yeah.
But at the end of episode 5, we get a very good cutscene, which I did enjoy, which was Sinjin burns. Is it a drawing she did of Rochester?
It's a drawing of Thornfield.
Okay.
Yeah.
He burns a drawing of Thornfield. And then it cuts to Thornfield burning because Sinjin is a witch. Burn the witch. Burn the witch.
Yes, yeah, seriously. Dude, that triggered me so hard because it gave me severe like Little Women flashbacks of Amy burning the manuscript. And I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. It's like, you can insult me. Ooh. You can try and manipulate me. You can belittle me until I marry you. But how dare you burn my art?
You can say I'm made for labor and not love, but you can't burn my pretty, pretty drawings of a house I used to live in.
Not if you don't want a pen in your eye. I'll fucking kill you, guy. How dare you?
This is where Piper and I burst through a door. Piper already has a quill in hand. Yes.
Death by art utensils.
Then the last episode, they do the full recap with the innkeeper,
yep.
Which was long.
Sure was. I was definitely zoned out at that point.
I did watch it at 2x speed, and it was still long.
Yeah. And she goes, finds the little house, and he's ornery, and the solicitor. Okay, this is interesting. The solicitor talks to him first. And is like, hey, I found Jane Eyre. And he's like, what? How is she? He's like, well, she's wealthy and she's doing great without you. And he's like, good. I'm glad. If anyone deserves it, it's her. I'm this horrible, deformed monster with no money. I'm so glad she's better off without me. And then Jane's like, surprise, bitch, I'm home.
Which is, I thought it was kind of weird for them to change the dialogue that dramatically.
I know, right?
But it's their adaptation. They can do what they want.
They do whatever they want. It's fine, guys. How'd you feel about that scar on him?
I don't, it was so unmemorable to me. It existed. It was there. Rochester was deformed. Didn't he also had no hand.
He had
right?
no hand.
He was blind and no hand.
I think this one was the most... Like, it's kind of a tie. It was the most, like, grotesque I think they've made him. Mm-hmm. But I think it was a good tie with him and Timmy D's, like, big facial scar. The difference...
Well, Timmy D's, I can't stop looking at his cool 80s haircut.
I know, right?
But, like...
The mullet.
He did get maimed, but he got a really cool 80s haircut. So he, like, 6-1.
Amazing. With this one, it was a big, nasty, jagged scar. But they also, like, made his eye look all swollen up as if he had been, like, recently punched. So...
Yucky.
Yeah. But she stayed with him. He was a real beast at that point.
It truly felt like a pacing issue. Like, it feels like instead of going, here's enough plot for each episode, they went, well, we should start episode 4 with her, or episode, we should start episode 3 or five. Jesus. We should start episode 5 with her dying in nature.
Episode 7, Lily?
And then at the end of that episode, hush you. And then at the end of that episode, the house will be burning. And then they went, okay, but then we do have a 6th episode. And so all we're going to do in that episode is have her reunite with Rochester. And they're like, but the dramatic cliffhanger is too good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had to go.
So we have to end it there. Yeah. And so we are going to do the entire beat for beat scene with the innkeeper, because that's a classic. Everybody watches. I'm sure that you guys watched the 2006 and you were like, but where was the long, long, long scene with an innkeeper explaining what had happened?
Where he talks about how her brains were splattered on the pavement. Lillian.
And like, and also we had already seen Thornfield burn
down. Yes, yeah.
So like that was not, there was no big reveal of Thornfield burning down the innkeeper.
Lillian, this is a real Game of Thrones approach to a finale, because they famously, like, the second to last episode is the good one, and then the last episode of the season is like, all right, we're just kind of wrapping things up here. So, like, imagine the people watching this on television when it came out, if it was, like, a nightly thing, you know, they would have had that amazing cliffhanger. Yeah. That was their Battle of Blackwater Bay, and then they come back, and it's just like, oh, now we're just going to do some politics for a bit. And maybe you'll see some titties, but only if you're lucky.
Maybe that's a classic Jane Eyre tagline too. Yeah. Maybe some titties.
And we'll see some titties. You know what, Lillian? We didn't see a single pair of titties in this whole watching of all of these. There haven't been any boobs.
And this is actually just been building up too. Piper and I've talked a lot about our adaptation of Jane Eyre that we're definitely for sure going to do. And what we've come to the conclusion of is it needs more sex and drugs.
Well, it's going to be a burlesque show adaptation.
If we looked at the list, we've yet to see a burlesque show of Jane Eyre.
Oh, man.
And it's honestly, it's a lot of nudity for Rochester.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And everybody is just like, every scene ends with like a striptease, and then it's just the tassels and it's great.
Yeah. We tried to cut the Brocklehurst stripping scene and the ratings plummeted. The feedback we got was not worth watching, would not watch again.
Oh my God. Can't you just see him on his stripper pole and he's like, this is the pillar of infamy.
Jane Eyre's a liar and I'm a slut.
Oh my God. Oh boy.
I was trying to come up with a more old-timey term, but all my brain could supply was Brocklehurst is a slut.
He is a slut.
Not to slut shame Brocklehurst. He can do what he wants.
It's true. It's true. Let him live his exotic life. But anyway, that was our last version. Didn't we end it well, folks?
We ended on a low.
This is why the telephones aren't ringing for our call in to save the podcast. Because we're doing our best.
We do have a bunch more that we're going to talk about, because we're going to talk about the adaptations that we did not watch for the podcast, did not consume for the podcast. I got a lot. Our listeners are going to be shocked. Got a lot of facts about that. Some fun, some less than fun, but they're factual still.
Hey.
But before we do, I feel like we should rate this, and I'm purely going to rate this as if this was the entire adaptation, as if this was all, cause I cannot judge what I think may have been in 2 episodes we didn't watch.
That's fair. So do you have your score?
Yeah. 3 out of 10. It was rough. It was a rough situation.
Nice. I'm going to be generous.
3 out of 10 burning Thornfields.
Nice. I like it. I'll do 4 out of 10 stuffies.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that.
If you can find a squishmallow that looks like a broccoli, that would be perfect for my icon.
I'm going to do what I can.
Yay. And if not a squishmallow, any broccoli-shaped stuffed animal will do.
Okay, sounds good. Do you want me to include the optional cocaine or no?
Oh, yeah. Go for it. Get creative with it, Lillian. I believe you. I believe in you and your amazing editing capabilities.
Thank you. So I'm going to go through most of these pretty quickly, but there's a couple that I have sort of some interesting facts about. So one of the adaptations, so most of the things that we haven't watched are for one of 2 reasons. One, we sort of got a flavor of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it would be really boring to listen to us do the same thing over and over again. We're going to talk about that a lot in radio adaptions in particular. And then the other reason would be they were just like not, and this is going to sound brutal, interesting enough mm-hmm. for us to do.
Yeah.
The other reason, the final secret third reason we didn't watch them was they were inaccessible to us. Most of those are inaccessible to the planet. This one that we just watched was one that I thought was going to be inaccessible to us, which is why it snuck in at the last minute as it got uploaded to YouTube right before we quit the podcast. The other one that we simply could not travel to London to watch is the 1956 BBC TV show. Mm. So this was the first in the Bronte documentary that we watched. This was the first adaptation of Jane Eyre that was done on the BBC. It was the first Bronte show that was done on the BBC. Mm. And it does look pretty good. You can watch it if you go to the British Film Institute in London. I don't know the logistics of that, if you have to like make an appointment or what. But there's a few reviews that you can watch. There's a couple clips that you can see, like in the Bronte at the BBC documentary, they have some clips. It that also has some interesting context on like the history. This was the one that they talked about, right after World War II, mm-hmm. and when a lot of people had, or a lot of men specifically, had physical disabilities and kind of visible ailments from the war. And so
they related with that it was with Rochester.
What they sort of talked about with that with Rochester. We could not travel to London to watch this, unfortunately.
C'est la vie.
Still would love to someday maybe. But not for the podcast. It was enough of an ordeal to make it to Arizona, which is significantly closer to us.
That was quite the turnaround. Oh, I've thought about that recently. I'm planning a lot of trips right now. And I just keep thinking, I'm like, I never should do a 42-hour trip again. That was a lot. Do not recommend.
We leaned into cheap when we were planning it. The goal when I put the itinerary together was how cheaply could we do this? Because could we do this? Mm-hmm. And we should have gone back and went like, do we want to do it that cheap? Or do we want to maybe like get a single full night of sleep?
Hey, it was still fun. Glad we did it.
It was so much fun. Awesome. So glad we did it. Loved getting to meet everybody. Such a special experience. Would have loved to have like a real sleep.
Yes. Sleep is always good.
Yeah.
More than just on the plane.
Yeah. But so that's kind of the big one that like is accessible that we have not watched. The other chunk of a similar ilk is there are a ton of silent films that were made of Jane Eyre. I tried so hard to find one of these silent films. So the earliest one was there was a 1910 Italian silent film.
Cool.
That I could not find hardly any information on. And then there was another 1910 American film that was starring Irma Taylor and Frank Hall Crane as Rochester. And that one was the one I tried the hardest to find. And I actually ended up reaching out to a couple of different like film archives that looked like it was basically like, I found the production studio that had originally made that program and like who had purchased what to what. And I found this film archive that had most of the film archives for that sort of studio and the time that they made that. I did email someone who very kindly reached back out to me and said that unfortunately the film is believed to be lost. There's no reason that they have all the other films archived. So there's a reason to believe that there's no remaining copies of this film. But they did have a link to an article, some reviews at the time, and sort of a synopsis of what happened in the movie. So sort of all the information they have about it. Like interesting things that film archivists care about. Like it was 1,000 feet of film, which is just an interesting fact to have now. So I just sent you a link, Piper. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of quotes from different reviews that I thought might be fun to kind of pick and choose and read a couple. Like the New York Dramatic Mirror on May 7th, 1910, had a little quote about Jane Eyre.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. And what I love is that, like, the language of the time would be, I think the wording would be interpreted in a very different way. So I'm going to read this first line in two different ways, both probably how it was back then and then how it would be today. So the New York Dramatic Mirror, May 7th, 1910, the big headline says, "Jane Eyre said to be fine." Whereas today, it would probably be, "Jane Eyre said to be fine," you know? "Jane Eyre, which is to be released Friday of this week by the Thanhouser Company, will prove, it is confidentially expected, the best release the Thanhouser people have yet made. Unusual pains were taken in its preparation, and with the experience this new film is gaining in the production of motion pictures, it may be that it will turn out a notable film of which any company might be proud."
Which is just such a fun way. They're learning about how to make movie reviews, and they swinged and they missed on this one in a way I enjoy. It talks a lot about the company.
This synopsis by the Billboard, May 7th, 1910.
Quick note on the other one.
Yes.
And I would like to say before I make this note, that I am so bad at reading these that I refuse and send them to Piper to read. So any mistakes are actually on me. But you did said confidentially, and I think you meant confidently expected.
Oh, wow. Thanks for correcting me on air. You know me, I just like plow forward with confidence.
You know, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's why you're better at this than me.
So this synopsis, Jane Eyre, an orphan. Let's see how they compare, by the way, to our okay. recaps.
Okay.
"Jane Eyre, an orphan, is adopted by an uncle who treats her kindly. Her uncle's kin, however, are unfeeling, and when the uncle dies, they send Jane to an orphan asylum. 5 years later, she leaves to accept a position as governess at Lord Rochester's little niece. Rochester falls in love with her, then obtains her consent to marriage, much to the chagrin of Jane's unfeeling cousin, who aspired to win Rochester's hand and fortune." So now the cousin is involved.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's crazy. I'm very curious about what this would be, because it sounds like they made some choices. Like they had her uncle still be alive at the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And my guess is the cousin is supposed to be some mix of Blanche and St. John. And it doesn't, I'm curious, we'll read some more of these synopsises, but I'm curious, it doesn't sound like Bertha was in this one.
No, it doesn't. I mean, who knows? They wouldn't spoil that in the review, I wouldn't think.
I guess maybe.
Yeah, because that would be a major spoilie, and that person would be fired from their job if they're like, "Hey, you mentioned Thanos' snap in the first sentence. You're out of here." Any other one of these that you particularly want me to do? Or should I just pick a random one?
I didn't read these.
Okay.
In advance.
So this one seems to criticize it a little bit. So I'll read this one.
Oh, okay.
This is a review from the Morning Telegraph on May 8th, 1910. "The story of Jane Eyre is another popular story which has been dramatized by this company. The photography of the entire film is as good as any film ever shown. The story is told in a direct manner with nothing which would weaken the story. Only in one section of the film was action lagging. This is when the uncle of Jane Eyre dies and the members of the family of the dead man do not show the proper emotion at their loss. Otherwise, the subject is excellent." I just love, they're like, yeah, a guy dies and no one really cares, and I could have done without that bit, but the rest is fine.
I feel like I just want to listen to your old-timey newsman voice for the rest of the show.
I would definitely
change our mind.
Oh no, I can't maintain it that long. It would get real annoying real fast. Fine. But thank you for liking it.
So there were a ton of other, this is the only one I I like dug in far enough. That was like months that I was going back and forth and sending different emails to different people to finally get to this film archive where they were like, yeah, it doesn't exist. Oh, and I was like, cool.
That would have been so cool. I, in my film studies and stuff, I think there's such a beautiful art to the pantomime mm-hmm. of silent film. And Jane Eyre is a story that would really benefit from the like over the top acting of these kinds of like of this format of people, you know, having big dramatic like, oh no, and like throwing themselves against like things when they realize the truth about different stuff. It would have been very great. So
yeah, I really wanted us to watch a silent film adaptation. I think one of the things that I find most interesting about this and the reason that I was so interested in finding the 1910 one was because that was when, like, as soon as films became a thing, mm-hmm. they were adapting Jane Eyre. Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that is so interesting about this podcast in general is, like, the 34 version that we watched was the first one with sound. Mm-hmm. But it was far from the first adaptation of Jane Eyre. So a list that I know to be incomplete that I pulled from has 10 silent adaptations, two from 1914, two from 1915, one from 1918, and then two from the 20s. And they're from all over the world, primarily England and the United States, but multiple in Italy, and at least one in Germany. That's another one that I looked into trying to get that just was really inaccessible. But I think it's just so interesting that Jane Eyre fit as soon as there was a new format to tell a story, mm-hmm. they were telling Jane Eyre. And I think some of that is probably the reason that a lot of things are adaptations now, like adaptations and sequels now, which is it's just less of a risk mm-hmm. Because you know it's a successful story.
Yeah.
But I also think it speaks to the fact that this story there's so much inherent in this story that makes it compelling enough that continuing to adapt it is compelling.
Totally. I agree. And I like that context, Lillian, of being like, especially when you think of this with like the very first ones of saying there's a brand new technology. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure it's worth us investing in this. So yeah, let's tell a story that everyone already likes or can shock and awe people.
Similar to that idea of like, as soon as Jane Eyre existed, it was being adapted. The earliest adaptation of Jane Eyre that we consumed was reading that, play from 1857. Mm-hmm. But we mentioned in To Walk Invisible, mentions that there's a play being made of, Jane Eyre. And that play was one that she mentions in a letter to show. So Charlotte Bronte referred to this adaptation in a letter to William Smith Williams, which is a great name.
William Smith Williams.
What a simultaneously generic and unique name.
Amazing. I love it. Montgomery Montgomery.
If I was going to make up a fake person, it would be William Smith Williams.
It's very cute. It makes me think of Pig William. It's a cute little character from a kid's book. And his name is Pig William.
Cute.
And it's really cute.
I love that. So this was in 1848. So almost immediately after Jane Eyre was released, it was called Jane Eyre, or it was also known as The Secrets of Thornfield Manor. Mm-hmm. And it was adapted by a man named John Courtney. If you were going to guess how many plays on the closest comprehensive list I could find, mm-hmm. How many plays would you guess of Jane Eyre there are?
Oh, I'm 600. Like, well, come on, like to have been adapted since it came out till now, like how many small like theaters have done a production of Jane Eyre? In the many hundreds?
Yeah, I think you're probably more right than the number I'm about to give. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things that I found through this process as well, is I've tried really hard to find like a comprehensive list of Jane Eyre adaptations. Mm-hmm. And I think I may be one of the people on earth who knows the most about them, which is sort of nuts.
That's really cool. Round of applause.
Charlene's the only one who I think could potentially beat me. And Piper, close second. I just spend a lot more time digging through these dates than she does.
Well, I would only have it because I've stolen your list from you and I claim it as my own. Yes. Squatter's rights.
The list that I have, squatter's rights to my list.
I'm in the Google Doc and I refuse to leave.
The list that I had from Charlene's website has 63 plays. There were at least three that I knew existed that were not on there. So I don't think it includes like amateur plays or ones that were sort of not necessarily like published, but rather like, especially since Jane Eyre has been in the public domain, there's been a lot of like scrappy, we'll call them scrappy productions of Jane Eyre.
I like that. Scrappy do.
So a lot of the ones, there are a couple plays that I looked at that we did. So there was not a script of the 1848 one that she knew about. There were three plays on the list that were adapted before Charlotte Bronte died in 1857, which I think is very cool. That there was like three plays made of her book before she died far too young. I did look at a bunch of other plays. There's a lot that there's like three that we could have watched recordings of. One was like a 2016 amateur play that just, it looks fine, but I think it was like high school students.
Yeah.
So didn't seem like we could get a good episode out of that. And then I just picked one of the scripts for us to read, because it also didn't seem interesting to do a ton of episodes on a bunch of different random scripts.
Yeah.
One of the scripts that I did look at that was sort of a close second to the 1857 one that we ended up reading was there was a Broadway play in 1958, but we would have had to purchase that script. So there's a couple really interesting plays. I'm going to share on our social this week, links to some of these articles that I'm referring to. So the silent film, reviews that we were reading and, lists to these plays and other things I'm going to share. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff. There's also a lot more musicals. And again, those were ones that were tough because usually we could only find clips of them. Very few had full soundtracks even that we could review. So that's another one where if you are really interested and want to go beyond this podcast and go look into things, that is another place where you could spend a lot more time if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. I've got two more big chunks of stuff. One is the radio adaptations. We listened to four radio adaptations.
Yeah.
There are 27 that we have access to and off another Charlene list.
And a third of them are just the guy from
Orson
Welles is a third of them. Yeah.
So Orson Welles played Rochester in four different radio plays, both before and after he played Rochester on screen. So that man enjoyed playing Rochester.
I was going to say, what's our hypothesis? Was he a fanboy or was it just like profitable and the company was like, hey, do this again? And he's like, all right.
Well, it was his company.
Okay.
It was his radio company that put on most of these productions.
So liked it.
My theory on the ones that happened before was he was sort of trying out different ways to do it. Mm-hmm. He also had Joan Fontaine, who ended up playing Jane to his Rochester. They didn't do one together, but she did play Jane in one of the radio plays he produced prior to being Jane in the movie. So I do think it was a way of sort of like seeing how people reacted to different actresses as well as himself playing Rochester.
Neat.
And then I think it probably was just like an easy way to fill if you needed a bump in ratings. Or on Saturday night, Orson Welles is going to be recapturing his role of Rochester. Like, you can see the marketing now.
Amazing.
It's
I'm trying to think of something witty to tie it into like some like Marvel thing where it's like, oh yeah, everyone's like, oh, we need Robert Downey Jr. back as Iron Man. Same thing. It's not very funny, so maybe I'll cut that out. Yes, I tripped at the starting line at the start of this. I can't be perfect all the time. But I try. Trevor,
what I'd like you to do is take this chunk out and cut it in after the ending music so that anybody who truly loves us listens to your love of a joke that I love.
Well, if I remember to do it, I'll do it.
Piper's like, it's coming out on New Year's Day. I'm not working that hard.
No.
So the last sort of big chunk of things that we did not consume all of, because this list could genuinely be a full 2 years of a podcast, mm-hmm. is books inspired by Jane Eyre.
Cute.
So we read 4 books, 5 books, 6 books. We read a number of books mm-hmm. that were inspired by or retellings of Jane Eyre. And there are so many more.
Yeah.
The list is truly endless. And some of them are really good. It is probably the recommendations we got the most too that was really hard to cut off, because if we watch a movie, that's like 2.5 to 3 hours of our time. Mm-hmm. If we watch a TV show, that's 8 hours of our time. If we read a book, that could be like 10 to 20 hours of our time for one episode of the podcast. So we had to be really sparing with our choices of books.
Yeah.
So that's probably the area where there's still enough like really good adaptations of Jane Eyre that we just did not have time for.
Totally. And there's countless references to this classic story in so many mm-hmm. things, which wouldn't count as an adaptation, but I get excited anytime mm-hmm. I see it. You mentioned many times like the T-Swift songs that are references mm-hmm. to Jane Eyre. Sam and I were just checking out this weekend a horror movie, which you would absolutely hate, Lillian, but it was called Barbarian. And the general concept is that two people book a Airbnb at the same time, and then creepy stuff happens when they stay there together. And the guy in it, when he's unpacking his luggage, he has a copy of Jane Eyre in his suitcase. So I saw that and I was like, yo, crazy.
There's a Friends episode where Phoebe and Rachel take a literature class.
Oh.
And the first literature class is on Wuthering Heights. And Rachel steals Phoebe's idea about Wuthering Heights and shares it with the teacher. And so then the next episode is Jane Eyre. The next book that they're reading for this class is Jane Eyre. And so Phoebe tells her that it's about robots. And she starts her little spiel by being like, I just think it was really ahead of its time. And the teacher's like, if you're talking about feminism, I agree. And she goes, that and the robots. And it made me so happy because I'd seen that a million times before I knew what Jane Eyre was. Mm-hmm. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching it again recently. And being like, I get exactly what this is about now.
Yay. Yeah. It's all over the place. It's now mm-hmm. 2 years of this. It's now fully saturated in our brains. So I see it even when it's not there, but
it's always there.
It's a fun
eye. It could be a reference to a reference, but it all comes back to Jane Eyre.
Heck yeah.
A couple little books that I do want to mention that were either recommended to us or I really wish we'd had time for is The Wife Upstairs is one that was recommended to us a ton of times. Jane Eyre's Husband and Mr. Rochester are two books written from Rochester's perspective that were recommended to us. And then John Eyre, A Tale of Darkness and Shadow was one that we had put on our list previously that didn't get enough votes for it, but is supposed to be quite good and is a gender bend of Jane Eyre, which seems really interesting. And then a final one that I also really wanted to do, and frankly probably will just in my own time enjoy, is The Governess of Thornfield. Which is a choose-your-own-adventure book written by Charlene.
Oh.
So someday I will definitely read that. I highly recommend people read that. It looks really, really good. Truly, that was one of the heartbreaking ones to cut when we started realizing that we had to end this eventually, because we wanted to still love it when we say goodbye.
Yes.
But all in all, there's also one other book that I just want to give a little bit of an honorable mention to. We love making some jokes about Branwell because he's just so easily joked about. But one of our listeners or followers wrote a book called Oblivion, The Lost Diaries of Branwell Bronte, which is a book that he wrote that is fictionalized as if it was Branwell Bronte's diaries. Yeah. Looks pretty hefty. So if that's something you've been curious about, check it out.
There's so much to dive into, guys. This is just the tip of the iceberg. So you, even though you won't hear our voices talking about it, you'll still have plenty of ways to consume the story and these characters.
And send us your thoughts about these things.
Yeah, do it.
I'm still checking our Instagram even after the show's done.
I'm still marveling at the amazingly well-crafted lists that we got from some of our listeners of being like, here is every Jane Eyre fan fiction for every possible mood you'll ever be in.
Yes.
So those,
that's another area. There's a lot more Jane Eyre fan fiction.
Yes. Which is amazing. I love seeing that still come out today. But yeah, Lillian, thank you for that amazingly curated list. I know you talked about back when we were doing our Patreon that you would like possibly have like lists and things to share. So I know some of our things, like some of our art and stuff, will be made public at the end of this podcast. So who knows? Maybe that'll be one of those things.
Yeah, go to our website. It does take me some time to build some of that stuff out. So a lot of our lists I don't have on there yet, but follow us on social and we'll make sure to get all of those out there. We're at Airbuds everywhere. Mm-hmm. We also, this is not our last episode. This is just our last episode talking specifically about adaptations. We are going to be back next week for an episode that I have had in my notes for almost a year as Goodbye Jane, which makes me a little sad every time I think about it. But we're going to come back next week. We're going to talk about, it's going to be a sort of overview, reflection, conversation about a lot of the bigger themes that we've talked about throughout this podcast.
Yeah, that is definitely, I mean, obviously, I was about to say, that's one you don't want to miss. It's the last episode, guys. You can't, you're not allowed to miss it.
If you listen to this whole thing and you don't come back next week.
This is not a Game of Thrones, you guys. This is not the best episode, the last one.
Next episode's going to be the best one.
Yeah. So thank you for joining us for this one again. Yes, it's still leave your 5-star reviews because the episodes will remain up and people can still discover this and find this. And who knows, maybe this is the next nostalgia bomb 20 years from now. People are going to be like,
viral sensation 2047.
Hell yeah, guys. Share it with a friend, leave a 5-star review, and happy Jane Eyre reading and watching. Happy New Year. Bye.
Bye.
See you later.